broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You cannot abandon your child for even a minute.
Yeah, let's talk about Dancing with the Stars. Dancing with the Stars, yes.
He's a really good kid. He really liked baseball, too. He used to hang out with a lot of people.
I have no doubt that everyone will find something in this compromise that they don't like.
I forgot he was black tonight.
Well, I hope you knew to use a condom.
That is a threat on the radio.
It's a threat.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where through the looking glass we take you to places other talk shows wish they could go, but they can't. They can, man. This hour, toll workers in Florida are banned from decorating their booths because it's a bunch of, Jesus stuff, and we can't have that now, can we? Plus, Dawn Meredith has died, and Kathy Griffin gets booed by our troops over a Bristol Palin joke. PhilHendryShow.com. That's PhilHendryShow.com. 877-876-PHIL is our number, and online at PhilHendryShow.com, where you can take a look at live streaming video of our show and listen to live streaming audio. We also have thousands of hours of archive material. We have the Phil Classic podcast. We have the daily podcast. We have our mini podcast. We have our news feed and a comment section and email. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. Soon to come this week, merchandise store will be opening up, and we're going to be selling prior to Christmas our best of CD collection, our classic best of CD collection going back to 1997. So I think it'll be a fun time. All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're going to start off here with, well, either one. I mean, the Florida booth thing.
Right, Kathy Griffin and all that stuff.
All right, Kathy Griffin, one of the things about entertaining troops these days that's different from, let's say, oh, I don't know, when the USO was out there, let's say back in World War II, or when Bob Hope was doing his thing in Vietnam, there was a clear rapport, I suppose, between entertainer and troop, you know, and that kind of went out the window here with Kathy Griffin. She did a Bristol Palin joke, and she got booed. Now, in reading the article, they say that she seemed confused. So, when I read a story like this, I'm going to ask myself, well, did Kathy Griffin do the joke knowing full well it would not be well received, and it was just her little slam on Palin and too bad what the troops think? Well, I don't know if that's necessarily a winning strategy, you know?
Yeah. You don't want people be like you.
Yeah. Well, I know that. So why go out there and tell a joke?
Yeah, nobody's going to like the joke. Why would you tell it?
Exactly. But I thought, who knows, she's a little whack. Or maybe she thinks she's so marvelously funny that they'll laugh at anything. After all, she was on stage there with Anderson Cooper. Remember that New Year's Eve to forget? She sucked there, but Cooper laughed at everything she said because that's what he was instructed to do. Now, the troops at the Marine Corps Air Station in California, wherever that is, we used to have one here in El Toro, I don't know where this would be, booed Kathy Griffin at VH1 Divas Salute to the Troops. VH1's Divas Salute to the Troops. For a joke taunting Bristol Palin for seemingly being the only contestant in the history of Dancing with the Stars to actually gain weight during the show. Pretty funny joke, but
just the wrong person.
Well, yeah. As criticism for Kathy mounts a day after the special aired, sources told PopEater.com, VH1 nearly cut the ugly moment out of the show. As criticism for Kathy mounts, it says. Really? Well, we'll see. After all, it is coming to us from PopEater.com, so you'll forgive me, the Wall Street Journal, you ain't. There was talk at VH1 about editing out the joke and the reaction to it, but in the end, we decided to leave it in. A network insider tells me it made the event feel live, and Kathy's a big girl. It's not the first time one of her jokes has failed. Oh, that's got a sting! Let's listen here, folks. A joke at the expense of Bristol Palin by comedian Kathy Griffin doesn't go over very well here with the Marines.
Yeah, let's talk about Dancing with the Stars. Dancing with the Stars. Yes. Yes. We're going to talk it out. We got two words. Bristol Palin. Yeah, that's right. Come on. Come on. You're going to like this. She's the only contestant in the history of the show actually gain weight. No, come on, come on. She gained like 30 pounds a week. I swear to God, it was fantastic. She's like the white precious. She's like the white precious. You can boo louder than that. Come on, boo me. I love it. I love it. War is hell. War is hell.
Okay. Anyway, in case you missed it, there it was. That was the joke. This is the first time Kathy has used the Palin clan in her act. Last year, she walked the red carpet with the father of Bristol Palin's baby, Levi Johnson, at the Teen Choice Awards and even announced and joked they were dating. She also took Levi along with her to Sarah's hometown of Wasilla, Alaska. During the failed bit, Kathy seemed unsure of what exactly the crowd was booing. I didn't hear that.
It sounded to me like she was expecting a boo.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like to me. So that's another piece of rotten reporting you did, Pop Eater. During the failed bit, Kathy seemed unsure of what exactly the crowd was booing. No, she sounds like she, I agree with you, she sounds like she expected the boos. However, the war is hell thing was a little weird. I'm sure Kathy was surprised by the reaction a friend of Griffin tells Pop Eater, a friend, a deep personal close friend who would not be named, but also has some other interesting things to say. She's not sure if it was the fat part or the Palin part of the joke that the troops protested. However, if you think one audience reaction is going to get her to stop telling Palin jokes, you're wrong. That family is comedy gold, even if our men and ladies in uniform don't seem to think so. Of course. Well, they're comedy gold with some people, and like we were saying before the show, it ain't Hollywood out there. It's America, and Hollywood is great for Hollywood. There is a sort of an insular. It blows my mind personally. There is a really insular. There's an insular. It's an atmosphere among some performers that when they talk about how much they think, say, Sarah Palin sucks, or how much they hated George Bush, or how much they think this is wrong or that's wrong, and they speak of it openly, they think everybody agrees with them, you know, and they don't. And then they get out into the world and they hear like Marines booing their ass. But she sounded like she was expecting it. Now, here's Bristol Palin's statement. The audience's reaction to the comedian spoke volumes, and the decent people I know would probably have booed her, too. This is Bristol Palin speaking in a statement to Fox News Pop-Tarts. I hope people didn't have to pay money to hear her negativity and criticisms. I don't think so. It was for the troops. I hope not, anyway. And can we find out also, Bud, where was this?
At a Marine station in California.
I know that. Which one?
Like the one at El Toro.
They closed El Toro. At least I thought they closed El Toro. So it's a different one, man. All right, so good luck there with that one, man. And then the other story that we had here was the toll worker story. And this has to do with toll workers in Florida who were decorating their booths so that they could have the Christmas spirit, right? And some pains in the ass that are driving through these booths, they were protesting the decorations. It bothered them. You know, I don't know what to say about people, but because their lives are lousy to begin with, because they get out of bed on the wrong side anyway, because they're never going to be anything other than what they are, just pruned up, dried out, worthless, complaining bastards, and because their wives and their children hate them, they have to make everybody else's life miserable. So they pull up to the toll booth, where some guy that doesn't make a whole lot of money has decided to put some lights and maybe a little bit of tinsel, whatever, around his toll booth, and they complain. So one toll worker got upset. Her name is Lana Fontanetta. She was coming to work decked out in Christmas-themed clothes. She had bells on her earrings. She had green and red scrunchies in her hair. She's celebrating her favorite holiday. They had the annual tree, and the garland was put up in the window, but on Saturday, it was gone from public view because these pain in the asses that come out at Christmas time want all the Christmas decorations taken down because it's their constitutional right to go around and crap on everybody's good time. See, one of the things that, I don't know whether they're atheists or what they don't understand is, I'm not a religious guy, but I like to see Christmas decorations. Why? Because it's a holiday festival. Holiday!
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means it's a holiday festival. For Christians, it's the birth of Jesus. For pagans, it's Yule. For Phil Hendry, it's a holiday festival.
I don't understand a holiday festival.
What do you want me to tell you, man? This is the time of year where we have a winter holiday festival, and there's really cool stuff that goes on. This is Phil Hendry telling you now, okay?
Yeah.
The Christians are having Jesus' birth. I like that. I think that's great. The pagans, they're having the Yule log. I like that. I think that's great. Some other people are doing the solstice thing. I think that's cool. And some of them do a tree, and some of them have a manger, and Phil Henry enjoys all of it. You see?
Yeah, but I mean, ain't you supposed to call it Christmas?
I call it Christmas. I call it Christmas. It's not going to kill me to call it Christmas. Now, understand, I don't go to church on Christmas. I did, and I don't anymore. And it's not because I don't like church. It's because it's too crowded. It's just, you know.
Yeah, you used to go to like the midnight and everything, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to midnight mass. I was raised Catholic, so midnight mass was a big thing for everybody. Midnight mass. But I personally, I got to be honest with you, I don't go to midnight mass because, to be honest, there's a lot of jackasses. First of all, there's a lot of non-Catholics. I don't know what their problem is. What the hell are you doing going to mass? And they come busted in there like a bunch of pains in the ass. They're taking over all the pews. They think they're at a ball game because they're, hey, Bill! Bill! I got a seat up front. Let's go. I mean, what is that? And then here come all the jack Catholics like me that go to mass once or twice or three times a year. And I thought, you know what? I'll do everybody a favor and not go, for the real, you know, devout Catholics can go. And that's fine. And I don't have a problem with that. But sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, man. I mean, that's just where it's at. I don't get bent out of shape. Atheists and these people that are getting, there's something wrong with them, man. There's something that happened when they were kids. I don't think they got the puppy they wanted or the bicycle got stolen or something. Or they have a higher calling and they're going to hip all of us to what that is whenever they figure it, whenever they tune it in, man, and they stop getting the static.
I don't know, man. I kind of like the way you're looking at that, Bo.
You like the way I look at it?
Yeah. Well, you say it's just a holiday. It can be any kind of festival.
No, it's not. Can't be any kind of festival. It's a holiday festival to me that I call Christmas. And sometimes I call it, you know how a lot of times you'll see a card, Happy Yuletides or Yuletime, that kind of jazz?
Yeah, it'll say like Yuletide.
Yuletide, yeah. Well, Yule is actually the pagan celebration of Christmas. But, you know, we use that. We use the term Yule.
Well, about Hanukkah and stuff like that.
Fine. Hanukkah's, you know, Hanukkah's cool. I don't mention Hanukkah because, well, you know.
The Jews.
Yeah, the Jews. No, I'm kidding. Hanukkah's great, although many of my Jewish friends will tell you, compared to Christmas, Hanukkah's a crashing bore.
You better watch how you say that.
No, but I mean, the point is, yes, that's fine, too. It's just a big, cool time of the year to have a festival where people give presents and try to feel good about each other and try to feel good about the world. And can't we do that? No, we can't. We have to have, here they come. There's always got to be in America, and it's a beautiful thing. Every positive force has its negative force. Isn't that sort of the physics way of viewing things? So such is the case, I suppose, in holidays. Every good time has to be counterbalanced by a bad time, someone trying to screw it up. So here is a poll worker. Or toll worker, Lana Fontanetta, talking to WTSP television that she wasn't happy with the rule change.
Christmas is the biggest holiday and means so much to me. You want to feel the joy. And I feel like somebody's trying to keep me down.
Yeah.
I am a Christian. And I'm not afraid to say it. I feel like someone's trying to tell me not to celebrate.
Uh-huh.
Or how to celebrate.
Blah, 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 blah. Oh, shut up. No, that's very good, Len. I agree with you. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And a couple of sad stories, and I mean that very seriously. For me, I was not a John Edwards fan, and I don't suppose you could say that I was an Elizabeth Edwards fan. But as the months went by and I saw what that lady was contending with, and the kind of woman that she was, you know, I mean, her political point of view aside, who cares? But what she was contending with, man, I became quite an admirer of hers. And today, we find that Elizabeth Edwards apparently has posted a goodbye message on a website. The estranged wife of former Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards. She's been advised by doctors that further treatment of her cancer would be unproductive. A source close to the family told CBS News that she is dying. The source said Edwards would likely die within weeks, possibly days. She posted to her personal Facebook page a message to friends, reading in part, "The days of our lives for all of us are numbered. We know that." CBS News has confirmed the Edwards family, including husband John, are now gathered with Elizabeth Edwards at the family home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in November of 2004, shortly before the presidential election in which her husband was the Democratic vice presidential nominee. In March of 2007, at the start of John Edwards' presidential campaign, she revealed that the condition had returned and had spread to her bones and that she had been diagnosed as terminal. The couple separated, as you know, following these revelations about Edwards and the affair that he had during the campaign. Elizabeth Edwards was hospitalized last week with doctors saying the cancer had metastasized to her liver. That was according to People magazine. So Elizabeth Edwards has said goodbye on Facebook. That's a first, I think. Maybe not a first, but that's someone so prominent. Meanwhile, Don Meredith, the third voice there in the booth on Monday Night Football in the 70s, when Monday Night Football was a television phenomenon, has died. Don Meredith was the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys and then joined Howard Cosell and Frank Gifford in the ABC Monday Night Football booth in 1970. His irreverent personality made him one of the most beloved figures in sports and entertainment in the 70s and 80s, helping turn the Cowboys and Monday Night Football into national sensations. Don died Sunday after he suffered a brain hemorrhage and lapsed into a coma in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He was 72. He was with his wife, Susan. They'd been married 25 years. A folksy foil to Cosell's tell-it-like-it-is pomposity, Meredith was at his best with unscripted one-liners, often aimed at his broadcast partners. His trademark, though, came when one team had the game locked up. Meredith would warble, "Turn out the lights, the party's over," from a song by his pal, Willie Nelson. He played for the Cowboys from 1960 through 68, taking them from winless expansion team to the brink of a championship. He was only 31 when he retired from before training camp in 1969, and a year later wound up alongside Cosell in the broadcast booth. And I read where Meredith never played at Texas Stadium in Irving. He played at the Cotton Bowl. And when he walked into Texas Stadium, he said, "I'm glad I retired. I wouldn't want to play in this place." So that's Don Meredith, 72 years. I suppose it sounds like an old-timer, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, what about the thing you said? That is pretty funny, the way you said it.
What thing that I said?
You talk about with Cosell, there won't.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hard. I can't tell it right, but Cosell says, "And the Kansas City Chiefs have turned the ball over, you know, four times, as is their won't." Meaning their tendency, right?
Yeah.
And Meredith goes, "Won't." And Cosell says, "Yes, won't. W-O-N-T. And the education of Dandy Don continues." And he said, "That's how I pronounce W-A-N-T.
I bet that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, that makes two of you, because I don't even remember why I thought it was funny. Anyway, here is Don Meredith singing "Turn Out the Lights" and...
"Turn out the lights, this party's over. They say that all good things must end. Let's call it a night. The party's over, and tomorrow starts the same old thing again."
Anyway, that's not him at a... That wasn't too... You know.
That's when he was old.
Well, it was in 2008 when SMU retired his jersey. Okay. Would you use a rented Christmas tree? Apparently, they're growing in popularity. I don't know whether we're going to do that story or not, but I guess we will. And we also have the box office results coming up next. What the hell are you giving me here, man? Get this out of here. We already read that stuff. We got some of that stuff coming up next. We got Taylor Swift. What the hell did you put on my freaking screen, man? 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL is the number, and also our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And we'll have more news for you coming up.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I'm telling about people about that, man.
That's a very good point, Robert. Thank you. Phil Hendry Show here in our news hour, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. Well, okay, so you think I should, Bud?
Yeah, and tell everybody, you know, when you started smoking, you was 14.
I started smoking cigarettes when I was 14, and I quit last December 26th, okay? It's coming up on 1 year. Now, the reason why it's significant that I've given up cigarettes for 1 year is that's the longest that I can remember having quit before. So since I was 14, I've never given up cigarettes longer than a year. And once I hit that one-year milestone, every day after that's going to be a record.
Man.
And it took getting pneumonia, and it took getting what they call it, H1N1 swine flu pneumonia. It took getting that sick for me to give up the cigarettes, man. And, you know, I'll never forget. They would put me in a wheelchair. I was in the hospital a year ago, okay?
You're down right down the street, right?
I was at St. John's, one of the greatest hospitals in California, St. John's Regional. And of course, it's a Catholic hospital, so like every day there'd be someone, care to take Holy Communion today, Mr. Hendry? And well, no, we'll pray for you. It was almost like I was, like, going to die or something, you know?
Yeah, you might have died, man. You could have died. You don't know.
I wasn't going to die.
How do you know?
I'm not going to die. I mean, if I was going to die, they would have put me in intensive care.
You don't know, man. They won't tell you.
Oh, okay. They won't tell me, huh? Well, anyway, I was really sick. I know that. But I'll never forget, they put me in a wheelchair to take me down to X-ray. Now, if you've never been in a wheelchair in your life, if you want to feel for the first time in your life like you got no control over nothing, like you have no power, like you are, I've never felt that sensation before. And I know many of you listen to me who are in wheelchairs, and you've gotten accustomed to it, and you've, you know, regained a sense of yourself. Imagine some schmuck like me, I'd never been in a wheelchair, and they're wheeling me along this corridor. I feel like garbage. I feel like I can't even lift up a straw. You know, that's how weak I feel. And there's people walking by, and they smile at you. Oh, hi, it's great, aren't you? Hi. And you know that they're, like, just to have pity for you, you know.
Yeah, they probably think you're, like, you're just an old man gonna die or something.
Yeah.
Well, I do.
All right, a minute ago, you guys are telling me that I was gonna die. Now you're laughing about it.
Yeah, they're looking at you like, well, that old man's gonna die.
What, do you find that funny or something?
No.
God, Bud, you know, there were young people in the hospital, too, man. Guys your age, okay, and they're in wheelchairs.
Yeah, there's going to be a young man going to die.
Yeah.
You were in the hospital when you put your head through that tree.
I didn't put my head through the tree. The motorcycle did.
That's right. The motorcycle decided to go into the tree. I forgot. In any event, so there I am in this wheelchair, and you don't know, man. You don't know. Just getting pushed along this corridor, and I feel like 100, you know, I feel like 100 yards of garbage and just weak as hell. So I said, man, I know one thing I'm going to do. I said, I don't know about anything else. I know one thing I can do, and I will never pick up a cigarette. You know, I don't say that to myself. I was going to say I'll never pick up a cigarette, but I'm going to quit smoking. And that was it. That's the last cigarette I had on the 26th was, I'll tell you right now, the 26th was a Saturday. That's the last cigarette that I had was on a Saturday. So I should say I quit. No, the last cigarette I had was a Friday. So I quit on a Saturday, the 26th. I didn't have a cigarette after that. And I was in agony. So it'll be a year, December 26th, and that's
you know, for Phil Hendry, yeah.
Yay.
Thank you very much, guys. All right, now on to after a very poignant and heartrending story like that, TV ratings. It's interesting, sort of. Football runover, 20.8 million. There you go, the football runover, the big winner of the night. Actually, this was 7 o'clock Sunday night ratings. The football from the 4 o'clock game, 20 million. CBS next with 60 Minutes, 11 million. ABC next with America's Funniest Home Videos. I hate that show. I hate that show. I despise that show. 7.8 million.
Why?
Because it's asinine. It's the most asinine thing.
What's wrong with it, man?
Well, what do you guys like about some jive-ass dude getting hit on the head a million freaking times? NBC's Football Night in America, which is their football pre-show, 7.1 million. Now, let's get into the real nuts and meat. Is that right? Anyway.
Nuts and meat.
Right, the nuts. NBC, Sunday Night Football, 17.8 million. CBS with Amazing Race, 10.5 million. Fox, third with The Simpsons and that big mouth Katy Perry, 9.6 million. And then The Cleveland Show, 7.1 million. Is that a, what is that, The Cleveland Show? Is that a Seth MacFarlane show? And then ABC's Extreme Makeover, Home Edition, 8.1 million. For a grand total of, I don't know, 9 o'clock, Sunday Night Football. Get a load of that, man. Boy, NBC really, Seth MacFarlane, yeah. How do you feel about that, Matt, being having to share a half hour with that guy? Anyway.
You better watch out, man.
Oh, shut up. 9 o'clock, Sunday Night Football. Who would have thunk it, man? Monday Night Football, it didn't do anything, but Sunday Night Football kicking ass, 20.1 million. ABC Desperate Housewives, number two with 11.2 million. CBS, number three with Undercover Boss. I love that show, Undercover Boss.
Yeah, did you see last night? That guy was crying and everybody and everything about that, too.
Which guy was crying?
One of the guys that cried, they gave the guy, the real boss came on.
Yeah.
And the guy cried.
Oh, I did see that. Was that what he was doing?
Yeah, to give him a promotion and stuff.
Oh, that's sweet, man.
Yeah, and another guy cried, too.
That's sweet. You know, I don't know which boss this was this past week, but one of the bosses on the show, he was being a smartass, you know? And I guess he thought it was comedy. Like, I know it was the Subway guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, she says, all right, how many tomatoes? He goes, a lot of tomatoes. He was trying to be smart. She goes, you know what, man, keep your comedy at the door. So she really busted on this guy. I loved it. Because this dude, he's the CEO of the company, and I guess he thinks he's got to do shtick. And meanwhile, there's this kid. She doesn't know what this is for. She figures she's got to train this jackball, and he's coming with the jokes. All right, 9 o'clock, Sunday Night Football, Desperate Housewives, Undercover Boss, The Cleveland Show, and American Dad. It's a Seth MacFarlane 90-minute extravaganza. NBC Sunday Night Football at 10 o'clock. CBS CSI Miami.
Chicken Crap Miami.
And ABC's Brothers and Sisters. Yeah, I'll bet it is. And that's a 7.7 million. Why does that sound dirty?
What?
If I say ABC's Brothers and Sisters, yeah, I'll bet they are.
Yeah, it does sound like incest.
It does.
I don't know. You're right. It sounds funny, too.
That's just a comedy device. All you got to do is say, brothers and sisters, yeah, I'll bet. And immediately people start thinking filth, and they laugh. I don't know why.
It's pretty interesting, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you. Obama and GOP have reached a deal to extend these tax cuts that everybody's talking about that they think are just going to save America as we know it. That's right. Brushing past Democratic opposition. President Barack Obama announced agreement with Republicans Monday night on a plan to extend expiring income tax cuts for all Americans, renew jobless benefits for the long-term unemployed, and grant a one-year reduction in Social Security taxes. The emerging agreement also includes tax breaks for businesses that the president said would contribute to the economy's recovery from the worst recession in eight decades. Obama's announcement marked a dramatic reversal of his long-held insistence, originally laid out in his 2008 campaign, that tax cuts should be only extended to incomes up to $200,000 for individuals, $250,000 for couples. Well, so he's come through with his campaign promise, you know.
Yeah, but that's all.
Yeah, well, so now everybody gets one. What's wrong with that? He explained his about-face by saying that the agreement called for a temporary two-year extension of cuts at all income levels, not the permanent renewal that the Republicans have long sought. So it is a temporary two-year extension of cuts, not the permanent renewal. Even so, in a sign of Democratic discontent, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid reacted curtly to the president's announcement. Why, that dirty N-word, he said.
He didn't say that.
No, he didn't. Of course he didn't. He said another word. No, he didn't. He said, even so, in a sign of Democratic discontent. No, he didn't say that. I said that. Here's what Harry Reid said. Now that the president has outlined his proposal, Senator Reid plans on discussing it with his caucus tomorrow. Huh? Said his spokesman Jim Manley in a written statement. So Harry Reid didn't say anything.
Yeah, you said something and Jim Manley said something. Harry Reid, he didn't. He not never said nothing.
He not never said nothing. Boy, you're getting better, man.
Wow. Don't talk about me.
Senator Bernie Sanders Pain in the ass from Vermont raised the idea of utilizing a filibuster to stop from voting on this deal. Top Republicans were far more receptive. I appreciate the determined efforts of the president and vice president in working with Republicans on a bipartisan plan to prevent a tax hike on any American and in creating ba-ba-ba-boom-ba-bing-ba-bam-ba-bing. Let's get some President Barack Obama audio. Here we have the president. In announcing the tax cut deal, President Obama said today that yesterday that he wasn't in love with all the compromises, but says they're just temporary.
I have no doubt that everyone will find something in this compromise that they don't like. In fact, there are things in here that I don't like, namely the extension of the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and the wealthiest estates. But these tax cuts will expire in 2 years. And I'm confident that as we make tough choices about bringing our deficit down, as I engage in a conversation with the American people about the hard choices we're going to have to make to secure our future and our children's future and our grandchildren's future, it will become apparent that we cannot afford to extend those tax cuts any longer.
Well, no, wait a minute. He's extended the tax cuts on the wealthy. That's what they're upset about. But the tax cuts are extended for everyone, including those people who make up to $200,000 as individuals and $250,000 for couples. So he extended them for the wealthiest. And I think in many ways, this is it's a perception problem that a lot of Democrats don't like, that it sounds like Obama's caved. Well, look, he just lived through a pretty hairy midterm. He's the president of the United States, but he's got himself a Republican Congress. He doesn't want to be a veto guy necessarily, so hey, you know, whatever. Some people, I don't know. Here is Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont. He's an independent, which means that neither party wants him and they can't stand him.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you're kidding.
No, it says Bernie Sanders I. What do you think that means? See?
Independent?
Exactly, independent.
Why?
Because they won't allow him in either party.
Oh, man, you're lying.
All right, okay, so I'm lying. He doesn't want to be in either party. Anyway, here's Bernie Sanders. He's not happy with the tax deal.
Not only is this bad...
Thanks a lot, Bernie. Next up, we have... No, here it is.
Not only is this bad public policy, I think it is bad politics. Who is going to believe the president or anybody who votes for this in the future...
Me.
...when you campaigned for years against Bush's economic policy, and then you say, oh, by the way, that's what I'm voting for. I'm voting for tax breaks for the rich. And by the way, if it turns out in this deal to be 2 years, you can bet that that's just the beginning. It will be extended beyond that.
I want to ask you something there, sir. Is it about getting tax cuts for the middle class, which it does ensure, or are you just bothered because rich people have tax cuts? And I understand you're going to say to me, I'm bothered because rich people have tax cuts because we need that revenue. But I don't think that's it. I think you're just bugged because it seems like Obama caved to Republicans. But if you look at this deal, having lived through what he just lived through, having looked at these midterms, if it's a two-year extension, it's a two-year extension. I think he got a very good deal. Senator John Cornyn tells MSNBC that he's pleased with the compromise. He's a Republican from Texas.
The fact is, we need to continue to stimulate our economy, not through the sort of Keynesian approach of spending borrowed money that we've seen over the last 2 years, which has increased our debt by 29%, but rather by creating some stability and some predictability in our tax structure, which lets our job creators know what the playing field looks like, so hopefully they can get back in and invest and grow the economy and create jobs and opportunities.
There you have it. All right, coming up, attractive workers earn more money than ugly ones, supposedly. Plus, which movie finally knocked Harry Potter from the number one spot? We'll tell you we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and watch us online at philhendryshow.com.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. And we thank you all for being with us this evening. It's Tuesday. Our number, should you have occasion to call us, but not now, 877-876-PHIL. Just write that down, tattoo it, something. All right. We do have a story about Taylor Swift, and I guess she kicked ass last night in the American Country Awards. Am I right about that? I did see a little bit of the awards last night, not much, but a little bit of it. And then, or was it tonight? I forget. She sold out some shows in record time. Maybe I should just do this story.
Yeah, I was going to see you talking about it.
Okay, fine. Venue owners coast to coast are cheering as the first dates for Taylor Swift's Speak Now tour go on sale. What happened here, Jason? Okay. Because it was tonight. Yeah, that's right. That's what I thought I was watching, the ACAs tonight. Anyway, the country star sold out two shows at L.A. Staples Center in 2 minutes, while her June 25th stop at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, filled within 5 minutes. That's a 68,000-seat venue. Seven more sellouts followed, all on the heels of record-breaking run for her third album, Speak Now, which sold over 1 million copies. Freaking believable. Here is Taylor Swift off her album Speak Now, the hit song Sparks Fly.
Pretty hot.
Kicking ass, man. Seven more sellouts, as we mentioned. And Speak Now has sold over 1 million copies in its first week out. Drop everything now. Meet me in the morning. Now, never mind that she's just a new generation Shania Twain. She's really,
You're going to get in trouble for that.
Well, come on.
Man, why can't you just let people have success and not, crap all over them and everything like that?
Well, she is, man. She's just another Shania. Okay, anyway. You're right. She should have her success. Taylor Swift is, it's a beautiful thing, man. You never know, though. You never know. You never, ever know. Somebody comes out of the gate selling this much in terms of record sales and concert seats. It doesn't necessarily guarantee anything, you know?
Well, what do you mean?
Like, is she going to continue doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Some do and some don't, so... Anyway, the high demand for Swift's tour prompted venues to add additional shows, including two at the Staples Center on the 27th and 28th of August for next year. The full Messina Group AEG tour runs for 90 shows in 19 countries, starting on February the 9th in Singapore. A full list of tour dates appears on Swift's official website. In related Swift news, in their annual Entertainers of the Year issue, Entertainment Weekly named Taylor Swift as the number one entertainer in 2010, beating out Kanye West, Christopher Nolan, Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, and a whole bunch of people. Oh, Glee, and a bunch of stuff like that. So she's kicking ass, and Kanye West said the whole thing is a racist plot. So this is great, man. All right, congratulations, young Miss Swift. $250,000, that's how much extra a good-looking American male will earn during his lifetime than less attractive colleagues, according to University of Texas economist Daniel Hammermesh. The study is done by Dr. Hammermesh, who has written a book entitled Beauty Pays that will be published next summer by Princeton University Press. Not only contend that beauty has benefits, but that unattractiveness carries a penalty.
Is that really?
Yeah, that means, bud, you and me, forget it.
I'll make money.
You're better looking than we are. I'll give you that, Robert. After adjusting for all the other factors that can affect earnings, according to Mr. Hammersmith, women in the bottom third of looks are paid about 4% less than average-looking employees, and men in that group are paid 13% less. Wow. So how about that?
What do you think?
Well, I mean, at the top, men are making more money because they're good-looking. Maybe women, but the guys take it in the shorts, 13% less. The women are being paid 4% less, but ugly guys, we get really screwed.
You think that's why you probably don't make a lot of money?
No doubt.
You shut up.
If we accept that these findings are accurate, and why doubt Dr. Hammermesh? The questions then become, does it matter? The answer? Of course it doesn't, but it fills up some good time as we make our way to 58 and the end of the show. If we accept that these findings are accurate, the questions then become, does it matter, and should we do anything about it? On that, the experts disagree. Dr. Hammermesh says, all I want to do is cash the checks from the book and get out of here. One who thinks that people should not be penalized for their appearance is Deborah Rode. Why? Because she'd make a buzzard fall off of a crap wagon. I'm kidding. Boy, what a weird ass.
That's the weirdest laugh I've ever heard, man.
Deborah Rode, who is a law professor at Stanford University and could make a freight train take a dirt road.
It's fantastic.
Shut up. Anyway, Ms. Rode said that is wrong, and she wrote a book called The Beauty Bias. She believes there need to be more state or local laws banning. How are you going to do that? More state or local laws doing what? Banning discrimination based on how ugly somebody is? We're really getting weird. I mean, I'm telling you, we're headed toward gridlock. We're headed toward a kind of moral gridlock. We're trying to make everything so perfect, and you can't do it. We cannot do it. Thank you. Now, speaking of trying to make things perfect, even on a tough night, Jason Rance is our producer. Charles Wagon is our engineer and our technical director. Dan Northcraft, our associate producer and screener. Thanks, guys. Great job. I'll try harder. I'll do better tomorrow night. Now I'm going to get off the air, go take a look at my new car, turn off Craig Ferguson. That's all, you know. See you tomorrow. And don't forget, PhilHenryShow.com.
Phil Henry.